Hi everyone, welcome to Poetry, the Memoir of the Soul. My name is Barbara Lanehard. I'm the host, writer, producer, and your friend. Come on in, have a seat and join me. There's so much we have to talk about. Too much is happening right now. I haven't composed a podcast for a while because COVID-19 has affected my momentum. No, I didn't get sick, but we all found our lives disrupted some way or another. I managed to get some poems up online, but I was unable to focus on a podcast. I've had plenty of time to reflect on current issues while sheltering. First, the virus, which has altered the flow of life with breaking waves, tossing us about, and pulling us under. Much like click it or ticket, mask it or casket has become a refrain. Masks and other protective gear have saved many lives. However, issues of personal freedom have arisen, so many people have refused to wear protection in public. We are also in debate about health and wealth. Money can't be sequestered away. We need it like we require air to breathe. I worry that we are opening up too soon in order to get the economy moving again. At some point, I would like to explore the COVID awakening in more detail, but for now, this time of reflection has given us a space to be with and see ourselves. We examine our worth, our truth, our fear, our grief over personal losses at this time, as people die of viral attack alone and healthcare workers channel care and compassion in place of family. With that in mind, and as a segue to the issues of race and grief, my topic today, it is reported that African Americans and Native Americans are dying at a much higher rate from COVID-19 than whites. In fact, for years, these groups have been underserved by the medical community. I have posted a source about this in my podcast notes. Today is Juneteenth, 2020, a time to reflect on the contagion of racial discrimination in all areas. As I said, medical, but also economic, social, political, to name a few, including the legal system and law enforcement. Gross racial disparity and systemic racism came into full view with the murder of George Floyd at the hands of police, when an officer literally took a knee on Mr. Floyd's neck for a total of 8 minutes and 46 seconds, strangling him as he called for his mother twice. This is not the first case, and even since this tragedy, other black men have died by police or been fatally wounded by civilians. It's almost like no one can learn from the protests and demonstrations. The undercurrent of racism has been fully unmasked, revealed for us to face, literally. We are face to face with ourselves historically and socially. Our protective gear in this regard has fallen away to display our ugly side, our racism. We realize we must demonstrate our support for African Americans, and the entire world is protesting with us. Great changes are occurring as we open our hearts and ears to those who have been abused, held down, held back, and even lynched for many centuries simply for the color of their skin. COVID-19 has masked me, but I find it difficult to breathe when I wear a mask. But my being choked off by a mask is nothing compared to how we have choked off the voices and lives of black people by turning our heads and literally even choking them to death. I myself am a Caucasian woman, privileged by the color of my skin. My ancestors arrived here on the Mayflower, not on a slave ship. I'm of Scots, Irish, British heritage. My family has never had to worry about inequities in employment, housing, and education. However, I would like to honor the voices of those who have for years cried out about the inequities and deep torment of black people because of systemic racism. Their memoir is the memoir of all of us, and as we reflect on the reality of racism and the overwhelming rising up of voices against it all over the world, we see it is time for us to heal this contagion which affects all people of color and all races. My humble voice, will people say, "You're not a black poet. What right do you have to speak these poems?" I say, isn't that the problem? Must our voices be stifled based on skin color? Must our art be segregated too? No one would describe me as a white poet, but we quickly label poets of color as black, Latino, Chinese American, and so on. Why can't poets just be poets? Still, I find myself using African American poet in this podcast. With all my privilege and comfort in life, I wonder if I can ever become as powerful a poetic voice as that of the following poets, whose accomplishments in the art of poetry exceed those of many, who strain to write refrains of their rage and grief. I apologize if I slight any of their honors and accomplishments. Phyllis Wheatley. She was the first African-American author of a book of poetry. She was an African slave who became one of the best-known poets in the pre-19th century America. Her achievements and works contributed to the anti-slavery movement. She was stolen from her land, possibly Senegal or Gambia, at the age of 7 or 8, and transported to this continent on the ship called Phyllis. Susanna Wheatley reports she purchased this, quote, "slender, frail female child for a trifle," end of quote. And so this child became a domestic in the Wheatley home, taking on the name Phyllis Wheatley. Fortunately, she was well-educated and her poetry writing was encouraged. Here is her famous poem on being brought from Africa to America. Being brought from Africa to America. 'Twas mercy brought me from my pagan land, taught my benighted soul to understand that there's a God, that there's a Savior too. Once I redemption neither sought nor knew. Some view our sable race with scornful eye. Their color is a diabolic dye. Remember, Christians, Negroes, black as Cain, may be refined and join the angelic train. In his eulogy during George Floyd's funeral on June 9, 2020, Reverend Al Sharpton says every time blacks write their names, they are writing American history. Phyllis Wheatley's name shows her history, as she was brought over from Africa on a slave ship called Phyllis and purchased by the Wheatleys. However, she made history with her own strong poetic spirit despite being a victim of labor trafficking and slavery. Gwendolyn Brooks. She was the first African-American poet to receive the Pulitzer Prize for her collection of poetry, Annie Allen, in 1950. Also, she was the first poet laureate of Illinois. These are but a couple of her amazing accomplishments. This poem reveals a tragedy stemming from housing discrimination, or discrimination because a black family was able to find a house in a white neighborhood. A black family able to move into a white neighborhood ignore obvious acts of discrimination until Reed's daughter is physically harmed. He lashes out, and in his attempt to protect his family, he is killed. This poem is called The Ballad of Rudolph Reed. Rudolph Reed was oaken. His wife was oaken too. And his two good girls and his good little man oakened as they grew. I am not hungry for berries. I am not hungry for bread, but hungry for a house where at night a man in bed may never hear the plaster stir as if in pain, may never hear the roaches falling like fat rain. Where never wife and children need go blinking through the gloom, where every room of many rooms will be full of room. Oh, my home may have its east or west, or north or south behind it. All I know is I shall know it and fight for it when I find it. It was in a street of bitter white that he made his application, for Rudolph Reed was oakener than others in the nation. The agent's steep and steady stare corroded to a grin. "Why, you black, old, tough, old hell of a man, move your family in." "Nary a grin," grinned Rudolph Reed, "nary a curse cursed he, but moved in his house with his dark little wife and his dark little children three." A neighbor would look with a yawning eye that squeezed into a slit, but the Rudolph Reeds and the children three were too joyous to notice it. For were they not firm in a home of their own, with windows everywhere, and a beautiful banistered stair, and a front yard for flowers and a backyard for grass? The first night, a knock, big as two fists. The second, a rock, big as three. But nary a curse cursed Rudolph Reed, though oaken as man could be. The third night, a silvery ring of glass, patience ached to endure. But he looked, and lo, small Mabel's blood was staining her gaze so pure. Then up did rise our Rudolph Reed and pressed the hand of his wife, and went to the door with a 34 and a beastly butcher knife. He ran like a mad thing into the night, and the words in his mouth were stinking. By the time he had heard his first white man, he was no longer thinking. By the time he had heard his fourth white man, Rudolph Reed was dead. His neighbors gathered and kicked his corpse. "Nigger," his neighbors said. Small Mabel whimpered all night long for calling herself the cause. Her oak-eyed mother did no thing but change the bloody gauze. The treatment of the corpse of Rudolph Reed reminds me of the recent incident, February 2020, of the father-son vigilante team who chased down, some say actually hunted, and cornered an innocent jogger, Ahmed Arbery, murdered him and called out racial slurs over his body. Also, despite the worldwide outcry about the murder of George Floyd, yet another unarmed black man, Rayshard Brooks, was gunned down by police in Atlanta on June 12th, not even a month after George Floyd was murdered on Memorial Day. And as Brooks lay dying, the officer who shot him, Garrett Rolfe, kicked and stomped on his body and also called out racial slurs. It's like this treatment is a course of action, understood to be. It's very disturbing. Langston Hughes, born in Joplin, Missouri, became known as the leader of the Harlem Renaissance when he was living in New York, and the innovator of jazz poetry. He reports he was a victim of racial stereotyping in school, and I quote, "There were only two of us Negro kids in the whole class, and our English teacher was always stressing the importance of rhythm in poetry. Well, everyone knows, except us, that all Negroes have rhythm, so they elected me as class poet." This was quoted in a New York Times article upon his death. He was sympathetic to the plight of poor and neglected blacks, a major theme in his works. Walt Whitman's poetry was a great influence on Hughes, and I think this poem shows the same panoramic style. The poem speaks of anger, loss, and grief felt by the many of the oppressed from sea to shining sea, as well as love for a country that can still find itself, again, a home for everyone, not just the privileged race. Let America be America again. Let America be America again. Let it be the dream it used to be. Let it be the pioneer on the plain seeking a home where he himself is free. America never was America to me. Let America be the dream the dreamers dreamed. Let it be that great strong land of love where never kings connive nor tyrants scheme that any man be crushed by one above. It never was America to me. Oh, let my land be a land where liberty is crowned with no false patriotic wreath, but opportunity is real and life is free. Equality is in the air we breathe. There's never been equality for me, nor freedom in this homeland of the free. Say, who are you that mumbles in the dark, and who are you that draws your veil across the stars? I am the poor white fooled and pushed apart. I am the Negro bearing slavery's scars. I am the red man driven from the land. I am the immigrant clutching the hope I seek and finding only the same old stupid plan of dog eat dog, of mighty crush the weak. I am the young man full of strength and hope, tangled in that ancient endless chain of profit, power, gain, of grab the land, of grab the gold, of grab the ways of satisfying need, of work the men or take the pay, of owning everything for one's own greed. I am the farmer, bondsman to the soil. I am the worker sold to the machine. I am the Negro servant to you all. I am the people, humble, hungry, mean, hungry, yet today, despite the dream, beaten yet today. Oh, pioneers, I am the man who never got ahead, the poorest worker bartered through the years. Yet I'm the one who dreamt our basic dream in the old world while still a serf of kings, who dreamt a dream so strong, so brave, so true, that even yet its mighty daring sings in every brick and stone, in every furrow turned, that's made America the land it has become. Oh, I'm the man who sailed those early seas in search of what I meant to be my home. For I'm the one who left dark Ireland's shore and Poland's plain and England's grassy lay, and torn from black Africa's strand I came to build a homeland of the free. The free? Who said the free? Not me. Surely not me. The millions on relief today? The millions shot down when we strike? The millions who have nothing for our pay? For all the dreams we've dreamed and all the songs we've sung and all the hopes we've held and all the flags we've hung? The millions who have nothing for our pay except the dream that's almost dead today. Oh, let America be America again, the land that never has been yet, and yet must be, the land where every man is free, the land that's mine, the poor man's, Indians, Negroes, me, who made America, whose sweat and blood, whose faith and pain, whose hand at the foundry, whose plow in the rain, must bring back our mighty dream again. Sure, call me any ugly name you choose. The steel of freedom does not stain from those who live like leeches on the people's lives. We must take back our land again. America. Oh, yes, I say it plain. America never was America to me, and yet I swear this oath, America will be. Out of the rack and ruin of our gangster death, the rape and rot of graft and stealth and lies, we the people must redeem the land, the mines, the plants, the rivers, the mountains and the endless plain, all the stretch of these great green states, and make America again. Rita Dove, I quote, as a Pulitzer Prize winner and the country's first Black poet laureate, Rita Dove deftly weaves together subject matter that is both personal and political. She continues to shape the conversation on modern poetry as an editor and professor, and this is by Hope Wabuke in The Root, April 16, 2015. The Pulitzer Prize was awarded in 1987 for her famous work, Thomas and Beulah, which was written in 1986. It's a collection of poems based on the lives of her maternal grandparents. I selected this poem, Teach Us to Number Our Days, because it is relevant to the current social shift we are undergoing and participating in as we see racial injustice as though for the first time. Teach Us to Number Our Days. In the old neighborhood, each funeral parlor is more elaborate than the last. The alleys smell of cops, pistols pumping, bumping their thighs, each chamber steeled with a slim blue bullet. Low-rent balconies stacked to the sky, a boy plays tic-tac-toe on a moon crossed by TV antenna, dreams he has swallowed a blue bean. It takes root in his gut, sprouts and twines upward, the vines curling around the sockets and locking them shut. And this guy nodding like a dark tie, the patroller, disinterested, holds all the beans. On this day, Juneteenth, 2020, we also celebrate Black Slaves' Independence Day from slavery. Even after the Emancipation Proclamation, slaves were still not freed in some Confederate states. Also known as Freedom Day, Jubilee Day, and Cell Liberation Day, on this particular day, I imagine the celebration will be even more emotional. I chose this poem, Emancipation, by Priscilla Jane Thompson, who was born in 1871 in Ross Moyne, Ohio. She was a poet and lecturer, and she also taught at Sunday school at Zion Baptist Church. I was surprised and excited to find out she self-published two books of poetry in the early years of 1900 and 1907. I ordered Ethiop Lays, which was written in 1900 on Amazon.com. Cleanings of Quiet Hours, written in 1907, wasn't available on Amazon, but I might find it somewhere else. Her work inspired the Harlem Renaissance, and she died in 1942. Emancipation. 'Tis a time for much rejoicing. Let each heart be lured away. Let each tongue its thanks be voicing for Emancipation Day. Day of victory, day of glory, for thee many a field was gory. Many a time in days now ended hath our fathers' courage failed. Patiently their tears they blended, ne'er they to their maker railed. Well we know their groans he numbered when dominions fell asundered. As of old the Red Sea parted and oppressed passed safely through, back from the north the bold south started and a fissure widely she drew a cleft of liberty. Due to time, I cannot possibly give justice to all the poets I have quoted. Their many accomplishments as literary artists, awards, and honors cannot be mentioned here. They can't all be mentioned here. Each poet has influenced our culture in deep and meaningful ways through their verse. Many other African-American poets can be found online at Poetry Foundation, poetry.org, and other poetry sites. I humbly submit these reflections and poems to honor the deep grief and loss suffered by African Americans over the centuries. As for my passivity to their plight, I apologize. I apologize. I apologize deeply for being blind. Again, many other groups face discrimination, violence, and death by hate groups and even the police. Latinos, Asians, Native Americans, and many others. However, the focus of this podcast is on African Americans because of the response and wide protests around the world to systemic racism towards this group. Were it not for those filming the death of George Floyd, with onlookers begging the police officer to lift his knee off Floyd's neck, we may not have finally awakened to the depth of hate toward a group. I mean to choke to death, shoot to death, and then to curse with racial slurs and kick the victims? I pray all the changes falling into place as a result of these recent cases will also bring positive outcomes to other disenfranchised groups. As I end this podcast episode, I would like to close with these lines by Gwendolyn Brooks. We are each other's harvest. We are each other's business. We are each other's magnitude and bond. Thank you for listening. This is Poetry, the Memoir of the Soul with Barbara Leonhardt.